Chicas, live and underway here on ESPN. Alongside Hercules Gomez, I'm Sebastian Salazar. This is episode 344, where not only do we welcome Hercules Gomez back from vacation, but we say happy birthday.
Oh.
Estas son las mañanitas. Wow, my guy gets a vacation and a birthday in the same weekend. How about it?
Yeah, look at that photo they found right there with the fro. Damn, I missed the fro. I may bring it back. Coincided with the kids' spring break. Felt good to get away, I'm not gonna lie, but even better to be back.
Okay, take it easy over there. 42, man, that's a big number. Look out, 42 years for Hercules Gomez. Very excited. I'm so excited that you're back. Look what I'm wearing. Look what I'm wearing
Whoa!
Here.
Whoa, look at that.
Little Sounders gear.
Wow. Well,
plus, they put a five spot up on Montreal over the weekend. Not bad for a first win of the season.
Well, about time.
All right, so welcome back. Happy birthday, all that good stuff. We got lots coming up in this edition of Football Americas. We're going to hear in a little bit from Ali Krieger, going to help us look ahead to the United States against Canada in the She Believes Cup final. That's Tuesday in Columbus. We got Christian Pulisic staying hot overseas. We'll talk about that. And Lionel Messi is back. We'll preview his trip to Monterrey for the CONCACAF Champions Cup quarterfinal second leg later this week. But let's start, Herc, in your neck of the woods with El Tráfico, LAFC, hosting the LA Galaxy at BMO Stadium. Incredible atmosphere. You know, whenever these two teams play, it's going to be a good one. And Herc, this one lived up to the hype. 4 minutes in, LAFC with a goal. Timothy Tillman on the back post.
Yeah, they read the bio. Guess who's not good on set pieces? It's the Galaxy, all by himself. Second post, goal.
29th minute. Galaxy strike back. Julian Alde off the post. Second shot denied. And here he is on his third effort. How about that? 1-1.
Yeah, third effort. Not the first one. Not the second one. It's the third bite of the apple right here with the left foot. And thoroughly deserved for staying with the play. We're all level.
1-1. 1 minute later. Then Ibawanga into the box. He goes down. And we're going to the spot. But VAR says, you know what? Let's take another look at this. Herc, what do you think?
I think Denny Bawanga got away with one. That's what I think.
He steps up to the spot, converts, and it's 2-1. And how about that? My parlay covered in the first 35 minutes, Hercules Gomez.
Oh, shocker. Shocker that there would be goals in this game and you would take it, which is very smart of you. If El Clásico or El Tráfico has taught us anything, is there will be goals.
LAFC would have their chances. Thank goodness for me that Bawanga got his goal off the penalty spot, because Herc, how about this miss? No.
Ooh, it's been that type of season for my golden boot pick, Denny Bawanga. Didn't matter in the end, but he's gonna want that one back.
LAFC wins by a final score of 2-1, knocking the Galaxy from the ranks of the unbeaten. Herc, what did we learn from the first El Tráfico of 2024?
Nothing we didn't already know. I mean, we knew that when it comes to El Tráfico, it didn't matter who was doing well, who was not. Usually it was LAFC doing well and the Galaxy not. And then anybody could win. We knew that there would be goals in this game. Yeah, the 2.5 covered as well. There were some goals. We knew that there would be end-to-end action and controversial plays. It's El Tráfico in a nutshell. Here's what I will say. I'm bummed on a few things about El Tráfico. I'm in this beautiful place in Hawaii and in this resort, and take it for what it's worth. Lot of soccer paraphernalia that I saw, and was Major League Soccer paraphernalia. I saw a lot of Seattle Sounder gear, and this is a true story.
Of course you did.
This is not true story. The major sports that I saw were soccer and baseball, and they were either from Seattle or Los Angeles. I saw a bunch of Sounder gear. I saw one guy wearing a San Jose Earthquake a shirt and a few Galaxy merchandise around there. But nowhere to be found was the actual game. Nowhere to be found here was the actual game. I couldn't watch the game. And for Major League Soccer selling it as the marquee rivalry they have in this league, to not be able to watch it while still in the United States was pretty bumming for me. I had to wait to watch it when I got back. That is my first overall take there. I heard nothing about it over there. Not that you would want to hear about it when you're on vacation. All right. What do we find out about both teams? Let me start off with the Galaxy. They're atrocious on set pieces. I believe it's the sixth goal they've given up on set pieces this season. And we're only in April. It's a sixth goal. That's horrendous. What else? Another Achilles heel they have is depth. Jalen Neal, nowhere to be found, still injured. I don't even know from what. I've not heard from the kid all year. Cáceres, 36-year-old Cáceres, injured as well. Zarek Zavaleta, who was the backup to Cáceres, who scored just recently, he got injured as well. So Edwin Cerillo, who's all of 5'9", I think you're that height, by the way, so playing center back out of position. And to his credit, didn't do it badly. Actually played decent for what it is and what he could do. And yet you were left underwhelmed from the Galaxy. And I don't want to say they were nullified by LAFC, because I wasn't impressed by LAFC and the tactics, but they were, in the end, victorious. And this was marred by a call. And we'll get to that in a second. But just in general, LAFC, for a guy as Steve Cherundolo, who I very much enjoy as a coach, who I very much enjoy as a spokesman for the league, for how much Steve Cherundolo complains about the roster rules and relegations and loosening up the purse strings to spend and wanting more talent on the field, for having one of the most star-studded rosters in Major League Soccer. Wow, this was an abysmal showing. Just the tactics in this match, having all 10 field players 35 yards in front of your own goal and pretty much parking the bus and defending, which was very effective, because if you take away, and this could be said for LAFC as well, if you take away the Galaxy's transitional play, it's play on the wings. If Payne still can't run and can't find space, if Gabriel Peck, who's still trying to find his way in Major League Soccer, can't run at pace, these two players who aren't of the players of the brand to combine and to create in the final third, if you eliminate these players, if you eliminate Jovalić and limit him to his back to his goal, and if you frustrate Ricky Pooch so he's coming off and picking the ball out of the center back's feet and he's 50 yards away from Jovalić, if you do these things, you can hurt the Galaxy. You can make them play in a way that doesn't suit them, doesn't suit the way they were constructed this season. You will hurt them. The same could be said for LAFC, who I think are a transitional team. But this ended up being an ugly game that LAFC, I thought, to their game plan, played it perfectly. And we'll get into the call, which I think changed the game drastically.
Yeah, ugly game maybe, but a fun game. And I think that's something that, for all your inability to find the game on television, needs to be said. This is a great rivalry, and these two teams always, Herc, seem to deliver. And maybe it's not just the teams, maybe it's the city itself, because the atmosphere at these games is always great. It's like you're watching a game in a cauldron, in a boiling pot. You're just waiting for something to simmer over. And yet it is, Herc, at the end of the day, what we come away talking from this is an atrocious call. Not only is that, I think, a mistake on the field, but it's a second mistake here from the referee. The VAR does their job. You know, the VAR says, hey, buddy, you might want to go check this. He goes to the monitor and checks it, and even looking at it again, doesn't see it as what is obviously not a penalty. But beyond that, Herc, I think this is pretty clear. This is an example, like a textbook example of simulation. If this doesn't deserve a yellow card, forget the penalty. This deserves a yellow card for Bwanga. And so for him to, one, miss it live, we accept. That's why you have VAR. But to miss it once VAR has told you to go, that's a referee ego thing. And I know we wanted the real refs back, and I'm glad
we
have them.
Wait a second, these weren't the real refs?
Leave your ego at home.
These aren't the replacement refs? These are not the replacement refs? What's going on here? This is what upsets me. It's the Galaxy today, it could be LAFC tomorrow, and we'll still be having the same talking point. You didn't get it wrong once, you got it wrong twice. And the second go around of getting it wrong is just as bad, it's even worse. The ability to not recognize a clear dive or simulation when you see it in front of you and have it change the game. Because in the end, this is the goal that won the game for LAFC. This is the play that decided the game. Now, people out there and say, well, LAFC still had more shots. LAFC still did this and that. You give a team like LAFC a goal advantage, and they will pick you apart. They want to play in transition. It plays to who they are, to their strengths. And they did that. They didn't want the ball. They let the Galaxy have it. The Galaxy, in need of chasing the game, committed numbers. And then from there, LAFC can pick them apart in transition. Why? Because they have a goal advantage. It clearly changes the game. Now, LAFC fans won't care and should not care. This is not on LAFC. This is not on their fans. This isn't even on Denny Bwanga, who should clearly have been booked here and not awarded a penalty kick. Clearly drags the leg in an attempt to create contact. I don't even know if contact was even made, but this should never be a penalty kick. Did it end up costing the Galaxy 3 points? I think so. Did the Galaxy have their limitations in this game? Sure, absolutely. But without a shadow of doubt, this is a play right here that changes the game, changes the outcome of this game. And pro referees, for everything that they've been dealing with this season, for the justice that I think they finally came to them, to have something like this to the actual referees, not the replacement refs. These weren't the replacement refs that had a second look at this and say, you know what, this is a foul. Oh, this is clearly a foul. Yeah, without a shadow of doubt, this is a foul. This was the actual referees. To have them be the ones to make this mistake, wow.
First loss of the season for the Galaxy. Bit of a reality check, but Herc, I don't know that we didn't see the two best teams in the Western Conference there when it's all said and done.
Is it a reality check, though? I mean, in this game,
your first game to your rival, yes. You lose your first game to your rival in the city. It's a reality check. They were unbeaten before this, Herc.
Well, hold on a second. In this game, it's a coin flip to who wins, and we've seen that many times because I think form doesn't matter here. Form does not matter one bit. So I don't think it's a reality check. It's a reality check that they're not going to go the whole season unbeaten. So that's out the window there. They're just not a deep team, and they've got a lot of injuries right now, especially in that back line.
Yep. And we know teams that go far in the season also do exceptionally well on set pieces, right? That's right. All right, let's move on. Elsewhere in Major League Soccer. Well, you can't defend set pieces. It's not going to go very well for you. Inter Miami hosting the Colorado Rapids. Messi started the game on the bench, but he came on at the half and does what he always does, Herc, with a sick goal here in the 57th minute.
Yeah, if there was any doubts of his health. Oh, look at that! UFC champ right there. Any doubts of his health put to bed right here. A goal and an assist in this game. I even saw him diving around on his feet right there, sliding, trying to help defensively. He looked like he's back.
Yep. That goal made it 1-1. Colorado were actually up a goal at the half. As you mentioned, Messi helping set up Miami's second goal. We'll give it a hockey assist there. But Colorado actually got a goal late as the game ends in a 2-2 draw. Herc, we got CONCACAF Champions Cup this week. Second leg in Monterrey. What does Messi's return here against Colorado mean for that game?
Well, listen, a healthy Messi on the field, Messi, is a good thing for Major League Soccer. It's a good thing for Inter Miami. An angry Messi is a terrible thing for Rayados and Monterrey. Now, why an angry Messi? Now, we heard about the kerfuffle. Kerfuffle, thank you. That's what your favorite word.
Yes.
That
mm-hmm.
happened after the game. And then we start hearing things from Nico Sanchez, who now, a former player of Monterrey, who now works within Monterrey as one of the coaches there, how Messi came this close to hit him in the face, wanted to react to him, wanted him to react. Even called him a dwarf in his own words, el enano and whatnot. They got one of the guys that you should never get upset. They poked the bear of the biggest of bears that you don't want to go poking around. Now, we've seen angry Messi at the World Cup. That's not a guy that I want to play against. That's not a guy that I want to see on the field healthy. You gave this guy a reason to be ready midweek. In a stadium that is a house of horrors for you when you most need it to be a place that's a fortress. Rayados at home has not exactly been the home fortress they would like it to be. I know they went away with an advantage, and that's a story for another day of how Inter Miami let that one slip away. But leaving a team like Inter Miami with the players they have offensively, giving them life and giving them something to play for with one of the all-time greats now angry and willing to play for it, that's a dangerous recipe for me. And I think they gave this team bulletin board material without needing it.
Listen, man, I go back to that first leg, and I just think when Rayados saw that Lionel Messi was not in the team sheet, they needed to go all in. They needed to look for a 2 or a 3-goal victory. And whether they went for it or not, they couldn't do it. You know, we know what Inter Miami is without Lionel Messi. They're not very good. And Rayados, all they could do against that Inter Miami was muster a 2-1 win in Fort Lauderdale. I look at this, Herc, and I see the difference between what Miami is with Lionel Messi and without, And I know that Rayados is good. And I know that on paper, by plantel, by roster, you could maybe make the case that they're the best team in North America. But it's still Messi against CONCACAF competition. I think he's worth at least two goals in this game, maybe three when we add the goals and the assists. I think Rayados are in trouble here. I don't think they're going to survive. Definitely not Herc against an angry Messi. I see Inter Miami going through. Do you agree?
I would love to see Inter Miami go through. And could I see it? Absolutely. Do I think it'll happen? That'll be difficult. It's going to be difficult.
Why? What's your concern with Inter Miami that their defense is just going to get shelled? Because that's my one worry.
Defensively,
I think they're going to get goals, but can they keep it out of their own net?
Can they keep it out of their net?
That's for you?
It's my worry. That's my worry. Absolutely. Because when you commit numbers going forward, you leave yourself exposed in the back. And if Rayados has one thing, they have strength in transition. They're a horrible team to watch. For as much talent as they have on that roster, they play a despicable brand. Could I see Messi, Luis Suarez, Jordi Alba, Busquets absolutely running riot in Monterrey? Yes, yes, I can. Do I think it can happen? Yes, yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
No, I agree
with
you.
Let me give you one more thing.
I agree with you.
Dan Ortiz is not a guy to be trusted in a two-leg affair. Well,
Dan Ortiz, and this is why I'm going to agree with you. There's a saying in Espanol, pecho fríos, like that they don't feel it. In the biggest of moments, they let you down. They're a team that lacks that passion. This is the MO with Rayados. This is the MO with this team as of late. Go back to the Vucetich years, who they just let go, by the way. Dan Ortiz, that's his MO as well. This team, in the biggest of moments, especially at home, cannot close the deal. Now, they're a favorite on paper? Absolutely. But is there a scenario out there where Inter Miami, Tata Martino, Lionel Messi, who is absolutely angry right now, come into this stadium and rob them of the next phase of going through? Absolutely. Yes, I can see that as well.
This next transition brought to you by producer Beto says, speaking of Pecho Frios, let's talk about Tigres, who are in the CONCACAF Champions Cup.
Come on.
That was Beto. Second leg between Tigres and Columbus tomorrow down in Mexico after the 1-1 last week. Now, Tigres did not, by the way, have a great weekend, losing 3-0 at home against Pachuca. No André Pierre Gignac in the lineup. Certainly worth mentioning, but it was the first home loss under current manager Robert Dante Siboldi in 27 games, and it leaves Tigres seventh in the Mexican table. Herc, it's 1-1 going back to El Volcan. Just how confident are you with your Tigres-loving ways?
Wait a second. You guys are moving the goalpost because the rundown said how confident should Columbus be. Now it's how confident should Tigres be. I just want to...
I want to know your emotions. Tell me whatever you want to say. You want to talk about Columbus? Talk about Columbus.
No. I just want to know where we're going here. But listen, the reality is this game that they lose to Pachuca, Pachuca played with their A team, and Tigres clearly with an eye on what's coming next. And that's also, by the way, the first loss for Tigres under Robert Dante Siboldi in their home stadium. It's been over a year since they've lost. Now, they did this with a makeshift back line. They did this with Osiel Herrera playing as a nine. Not even Nico Ibáñez, who's the backup to André Pierre Gignac, was starting in this game. I mean, guys like Bruneta, guys like Orellán, guys like Aquino, guys like Pizarro, guys like Samir, guys like Nico Ibáñez, guys like André Pierre Gignac were not on the field. We're not in this game. Why? Because they want to focus on Columbus. So if I'm Columbus, do I feel like I did enough in that first leg when they tied 1-1? No. And here's the reason why. Okay? Camacho's not going to be playing. Christian Ramirez isn't going to be playing. Mata's not going to be playing. Aiden Morris, he's red. Not going to be playing. He saw red last game. There are a lot of injuries here. And the biggest one for me is the Cucho Hernandez situation. I know he just played last league game. He came out with a red card. I believe it was against DC United, right? Cucho Hernandez and Wilfred Nancy right now, the situation isn't one that I would feel so comfortable with. Now, I respect what Wilfred Nancy is doing because there's a breach in team policy. Cucho Hernandez did something. What? We do not know. He sat him. And he sat him in the biggest of moments against Tigres. And I think that moment right there could cost the defending MLS Cup champions their moment against Tigres, a team that's very, very good at home, a team that saved their guys for this next leg. So if you're asking me how confident I feel, if I was giving percentages, the majority of the percentage would go Tigres' way. Even though Tigres right now have not been at optimal level.
Give me a number. Give me a Tigres percentage to advance number.
65-35. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. You're giving Columbus a really big chance here. On the show last week, I gave him 10% chance even if Cucho played.
Oh, no. Cucho's going to play.
35% chance?
Cucho's going to play, yes. Ooh. Cucho's going to play.
You don't have a lot of faith in Tigres. That's what I'm hearing here.
No, I don't like the system. I don't like this. If Columbus scores two goals, Tigres got to score three.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's a dangerous combination right there. It's a way goal system. I don't know how much it favors the actual teams here. I like what I'm starting to see from Columbus, who I still think, out of the Major League Soccer teams not named Inter Miami, is the one that offensively shows you the best standard of football going forward.
Okay. Interesting commentary. We'll get back to that in just a second, because it was echoed by Tigres' manager, and I want to ask your question on what maybe he was getting at there. I think if Columbus don't advance here, to your point, it's because of what they didn't do in the first leg, right? We're never going to blame an MLS team. You go down to Mexico, you don't win. It's not what you did in the second leg. It's what you could have done in the first leg. Cucho plays, I give him, you know, maybe 25% chance. I'm feeling more confident about Columbus than I did last week because of what we saw with Tigres. And I know you named everybody that didn't play, but just know this, Herc. Those goals for Pachuca came in the second half. Ibanez, Bruneta, Gorriarán, Aquino, Pizarro were all second-half subs. They were on the field.
Lines,
they were on the field when Pachuca rolled
Tercero
that Tigres team.
Playing. I mean, you had Burata playing. You had guys
it's not just the Pachuca
field.
Game either. Tigres hasn't kept a clean sheet in six.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah, but you're focusing too much on
They're
Tigres
seventh
right
in
here.
The table for a reason.
Hold on. You're focusing too much on Tigres here, okay? If Columbus does not advance out of this game, all pressure will be on Wilfred Nancy. All pressure will be on Cucho Hernandez. I respect Wilfred Nancy putting the team first, but you're not giving the fans a reason as to why. And the fans deserve an answer. In the biggest of moments, the CONCACAF Champions Cup, you sit out your best player. You sit out your MVP, your MLS Cup MVP. You sit out the guy who's completely responsible for your offensive production, and you say no reason as to why, just to trust you. Fans aren't going to be that forgiving. This is a situation now where if they don't come out on top, all eyes will be pointed on Wilfred Nancy and what you didn't do in that first leg.
Real quick, what do you think of what Siboldi said? That this was the best MLS foe. You don't think he's taken out the umbrella there?
I didn't
hear that. Making
an
excuse for a loss?
I didn't hear that.
He said, we're going up against the best MLS foe in this competition.
Sans
Messi play
team?
For Columbus?
Sans Messi's team.
Okay. He didn't say that. He very clearly didn't say that. All right, let's move on to actually another team in Mexico. Chivas. And Chicharito, we got a Chicharito goal alert, ladies and gentlemen. Chivas taking on Puebla Saturday night in Guadalajara. And Chicharito with a goal in the 34th minute, his first in 14 years for Chivas and his first since rejoining the club. As we say on this show, Herc, what a moment.
What a moment. Maybe a little polemic right here. Is it offsides? Is it not? I didn't think it was offside. I thought it was correctly done. I thought he had himself a game. You think that was offsides?
100%.
No way, man.
And 0% that they're calling it back on this guy. Go ahead. Good finish, though. It's a good finish.
All right, I'm not getting into semantics of if there's no eagle eye, if they don't have the Premier League software, whatever. I don't think there's evidence of taking it back. So it's a good goal by Chicharito and one he desperately needed.
Listen, if it was an America goal that had given them the victory, you could guarantee that the lower third right here would be, did the refs help America win? Did America run the table, run the league, win everything because of the refs? That's what it would say.
No, it wouldn't say that, because if America had a player of Chicharito's caliber historically, it would be focused on the player, not on the team. That's why we're not focusing on the
America would never have Chicharito right now. Would never have Chicharito. Let's bring it back to him. Something, nothing, or everything for Chicharito and Chivas.
Everything. Everything. And I'm glad you said and Chivas. I'm glad you said that, because, listen, he's 35 years old. It's coming off an ACL injury. He needs the confidence. He's not played too much. You see a little over 200 minutes there. He gets his goal. That's going to give him confidence. But it's what I saw besides the goal. The opening minutes, if you watch this game, he, with his back to goal, he perfectly sets up Cade Cowell on a 1v1 situation with the goalkeeper that Cade Cowell doesn't take advantage of. Is Chicharito doing other things for the team? Chicharito coming into his zone, and then he gets the goal, which is desperately needed for a team that doesn't score a lot of goals. 14 games played for Chivas, 20 goals. They're a team that lacked that offensive production. If you can get Chicharito going, because we know he scores in bunches, it's going to help this team out. Now, Seb, where are they in the table right now today? Do you know where they are?
Where they always are, as you point out historically, their average is ninth. They are currently ninth.
If they want to move the needle and get above ninth, they need a goal scorer. And Chicharito can be that goal scorer. We've seen this movie before. Wow. He scores in bunches. He's got to stay fit. He's got to stay on the field. But if he feels it, Chicharito's going to score in bunches. So this is everything.
Yeah. Wow. I would say something for him, nothing for Chivas, man.
Ooh, what?
Nothing for Chivas. You saw this game. They jump out to a 3-0 lead. Puebla scored two goals late. Like, can Chivas do anything well? What's going on with Chivas
they
right now? Seriously.
By the way, hold on.
Seriously.
They
won to climb to ninth place. Let's celebrate it. Maybe we should move it up to the A block.
No. Listen. I know what you're doing right now. Okay. It's been a while since America won convincingly. They just tied their last game against Santos. They're, what is it, 12th?
Oh, we are in the A block.
We are in the A block.
That reminds me.
So Santos is in 12th in league position. Listen, I know what you're doing, okay? I know what you're doing. You're trying to put Chivas down right now to make America seem grander. This is what Chivas need right now.
America doesn't need to interact at all with Chivas to make themselves seem grander.
Hold on.
Chivas sporting director is about
America
to take a fat
into the
bag of cash. Going to leave him with a coach with no experience who's his buddy. You think this Chivas team is going to finish in the top six? You think they're going to avoid repechaje? I'll take that bet right now, Herc. Right now. They're ninth right now. No chance they'll be top six. Go on. You say it's everything for Chicharito and Chivas.
All right. What have we been? You already owe me.
Hunsky. Put it on my tab.
Exactly.
Put it on my tab.
All right, done.
Put it on my tab. There it is. Producer Beto, put it in the best.
Listen, man.
Listen,
two weeks ago, I would have said it would have been very difficult, right? But they've got no CONCACAF Champions Cup to worry about.
That's right, because they
were
eliminated.
They're only four points from fourth place, as Producer Beto's saying right now. They just beat Monterrey in Monterrey. They just beat Puebla right now, who historically they've never done well against. If you go back and look at the last three, 4 years, they struggle against Puebla. They beat them. That's 6 points in two games. They just got their goal scorer back on track. I'm telling you, it's not that far-fetched to see him top six. If you would have said top four, I would have not have touched it. You said top six?
I'll give you top six. We'll have to keep our eye on the table to see who wins that bet. All right, a reminder, we got a Clásico watch party April 21st. Real Madrid against Barcelona. I will be in Anaheim at Disneyland. Come hang out as we get ready for the second El Clásico and league play of the year. All right, Herc, time to run it back here on Football Americas. We start with Christian Pulisic, who had a goal, his 10th of the Serie A season, as AC Milan beat Lecce 3-0. Herc, he didn't wait long, 6 minutes into the game.
Yeah, he's also playing in the center. He seems to be playing that 10 spot, and the first thing he
Hell
does,
yeah,
give me the ball on my left peg. Let me put it in the back of the net. This is 10th Serie A goal. The man is in the best form of his life, better than lockdown Pulisic. I've got no problem saying it. And Milan want to pick up that option. Looks like he wants to stay an extra year.
10 goals, 6 assists in league play to go along with 3 goals in European comps for Christian Pulisic. How about this finish from Haji Wright? His 15th goal of the season in the championship as Coventry beats Leeds Saturday 2-1.
My man is hot. 17 goals, 7 assists in all comps. That's right, Coventry is 4 points away from Norwich in that final playoff position.
Both Haji Wright and Josh Sargent are up for Championship Player of the Month. In the air to Izzy, Malik Tillman with not one, but 2 assists, Herc, as PSV smashed AZ Alkmaar 5-1.
All right, that's 13 assists in all comps. Yes, 13 to add with his 6 goals. That's one of my best shouts all time, saying he was going to be the guy who scores more goals, more assists for PSV this year. I mean, I don't know what to say on that one.
You called it, I think is fair to say. The 21-year-old, yes, with 9 assists now in the league for PSV, a team that is absolutely running things over in the Eredivisie. He wasn't the only one to get on the score sheet in this. Serginho Dest also chalking an assist, his sixth of the season. Herc, here's a look at it.
Yeah, you know what? I was going to say Serginho Dest is one of the best backs in the Eredivisie, but the man doesn't play like a back. I mean, he looks like a winger at times. Like, he lives for this moment. This is what he does. Look at that. Fakes he's going to cross, just drives by his defender, no-look pass, and a goal.
PSV 9 points clear of second place Feyenoord with just 5 games to go. Both Dest and Tillman, by the way, on loan at PSV, so we could have some big decisions coming for that duo this summer as we take a detailed look at the CONCACAF contributions over at PSV. Been a great season for them. Looks like they're headed towards a league title, plus, of course, the Champions League success. You'll notice the guy at the bottom of that page, in terms of minutes played, is Ricardo Pepi. But his agent made some headlines. Herc, with his comments, here's what he had to say. Quote, this season is not good enough for Ricardo. 10% of all playing time is, of course, far too little. He understands, is patient, and congratulates Luke. But for himself, it is not enough. However, I have never met a player who was happy when he didn't play. If you play so little, you can also lose your place in the national team. With the Copa America this year and the World Cup in 2 years' time in your own country, there are two great tournaments coming up. Ricardo wants and needs to be there. That's why it can't continue like this. All right, Herc, which weekend DNP is a bigger worry for U.S. fans? Ricardo Pepi, who didn't play in the game against AZ, the club saying he was injured, or Tyler Adams, who missed Bournemouth's defeat against Luton Town with back spasms?
Yeah, I'm not surprised by the Tyler Adams one. I don't think people should be. He hasn't played in over a year. He just took an 11-hour flight to Dallas to play in the Nations League semifinals and finals. Finally got his first minutes coming back. Muscle stiffness is going to be normal. That one doesn't worry me too much. I think the writing's on the wall there. Ricardo Pepi, I'm not too worried, but in light of these comments, I'm a little worried. Now, not as worried as his agent. It probably shouldn't be too surprised if I were his agent. Listen, Luke De Jong, maybe, 35, 36 years old?
He's 33.
Also, is he 33?
He's 33.
All right.
He's 33.
Even more. Get worried. Even more. 33 years old. Luke De Jong is much more than a goal scorer. By the way, he's second place right now in the Golden Boot running. He's one goal away from the league leader, 25 goals league leader. He's got 24 himself. He's much more than a goal scorer. He's also the top facilitator, assist leader in the league. He's the clear front runner for the MVP of not only his team, PSV, but the Eredivisie. And he's also the team captain. You're not going to move him. If you're Ricardo Pepi, who's done well in limited appearances and limited cameos, 2 starts, 9 goals, a couple assists, you've done well in those limited cameos, but that's not enough. You cannot live off those leftovers, especially with a Copa America coming up, especially with a World Cup coming up, especially with maybe the Olympics. Who knows? But you can't. Mm-hmm. You can't rely on that, especially with the increasing number 9 pool for the U.S. men's national team. You've got to be fit. You've got to be playing. And you've got to be productive at the club level, because that equity you have at the national team level, that's going to dry up. If Ricardo Pepi isn't playing, if Ricardo Pepi can't get minutes, if Ricardo Pepi can't be on the field to score those goals, and other guys are scoring those goals, a Haji Wright, a Josh Sargent, whoever the case may be, whether it's Fallon Balogun, whoever it is, they will get those opportunities. So if you're Ricardo Pepi and his camp, you need to make a decision and make it soon, because the opportunities may not only dry up with the club level.
Yeah. So one, I think the agent speaking here can create a problem with the club. So just my one thought there is, obviously if the agent's saying this, it's probably not too far off from what Ricardo Pepi's thinking. But at this point in the season, this is not something that he's going to want to deal with going back into the dressing room. It is deeply concerning, man. The agent's probably not wrong when he says it's going to impact him on the national team. Luke De Jong is 33, Herc. Listen to these numbers. 33 goals in 43 games played. That doesn't sound like a guy who's slowing down. So if I put the question to you this way, if Luke De Jong is going to be the starter basically all season next year for PSV, and we know Peter Bosz does not like to rotate, right? Even when they're playing Champions League and league games, he still made Ricardo Pepi sit on that bench. He still almost refused to give him a single start. If that's going to be the case next season, should Pepi stay or would you advise him to go?
You got to leave. Listen, it may have been a good bet to be at a club like PSV, the understudy to a player like Luke De Jong. Maybe you didn't expect that Luke De Jong would have this kind of season, but you're not moving him. And he's going to have enough equity, whatever happens at the end of this season, towards next season, where they're going to keep him on the field to see if he can duplicate that. Because he's been that good. He's been the MVP of the Eredivisie. So you're not moving him. You've got to go somewhere you can play. If you've got hopes of playing Copa America, if you got hopes of playing in the World Cup, you have to be on the field. And I think Ricardo Pepi and his camp know that. And I agree with you. This is a dangerous game they're playing, but they're trying to get the attention of the club. They're trying to get the attention of other clubs. And that's why they're doing it.
I wonder if this is the same agent that sent him to Augsburg. Because if I'm Ricardo Pepi, and the guy sent me to Augsburg and then sent me to PSV when we knew Luke De Jong was going to be there and now is talking, before my next move, I'm just saying maybe, Herc, you want somebody else in charge of looking for your next destination. Because at this point with Ricardo Pepi, we're missing. We're missing a lot, and young players can't afford that.
Listen, man, that's the problem with being at a big club. You're going to have big players. He's got to go somewhere he can play. He's proven that he can score goals at that level. Maybe he stays in Eredivisie with a different club. But PSV, you're not going to get time there. Certainly not going to be the guy there. Not right now.
You know where Americans are scoring plenty of goals, Herc? In the championship. Which, of course, you can watch right here on our ESPN family of networks. On Tuesday, it's Leeds United against Sunderland. Coverage starts at 2:55 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN2, ESPN Deportes, and right here on ESPN+.
Unmatched. I love it.
50,000 plus in Atlanta over the weekend to watch the United States beat Japan in the She Believes Cup semifinal. Our Allie Krieger was one of those 50,000 plus. Allie, you got to tell us all about this atmosphere. It looked crazy on TV.
Yeah, it was incredible. Even just connecting with the fans and supporters and talking to them and you know, recognizing how excited they were that, you know, football was back in Atlanta, especially with the U.S. Women's National Team. And the atmosphere was really great and rocking. And obviously after the first goal, it needed to pick up a little bit for the U.S. to get back on its feet. But other than that, it was a really, really great atmosphere for the U.S. Women's National Team.
All right, so we know Atlanta's a great soccer town. And I'm just saying, if the U.S. gets the Women's World Cup in 2027, don't be surprised, folks, if Atlanta is hosting one of the big games, maybe even the final. Here's a semifinal from over the weekend. A little bit of a different format to the She Believes Cup this year. You go semi straight to the final on Tuesday in Columbus. And Allie, as you mentioned, just 1 minute in, almost straight from the dressing room, Japan takes the lead over the United States. It's Kiko Seike here finishing at the far post. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, incredible start for Japan. They obviously caught the United States off guard there with a high line. That's definitely gonna have to be something that the U.S. defense will need to look at moving forward into, you know, bigger tournaments when things, you know, count. And the defense there needs to make sure that when the outside backs do go high, that they shift across, and the center backs, obviously with Tierney there, just needed to tuck across a little bit quicker to try to prevent that earlier.
Good chance here for the United States. Mallory Swanson, Allie, cleared off the line.
Yeah, I mean, Mallory Swanson made a huge impact, obviously, anytime she steps out on the field. It was so good to see her back because just her technical ability, her vision, the way she can manipulate, you know, defenses and get herself in positions and create these opportunities was brilliant.
Naomi Girma would have to leave the game injured. Twyla Kilgore afterwards saying it's a thigh issue. She's day-to-day. Abby Dahlkemper would be the replacement in defense. But Naomi Girma, we know just how important she is. Hate to see her go off. USA with another chance here. Swanson gonna have the cross. Trinity Rodman with the header. Her shot saved, and Alex Morgan can't get it on target, Allie.
No, and I mean, Trinity was in a great spot. Mallory played a great ball across. She actually, you could tell she's picking people out, which is, you know, the difference from what we've seen earlier on this year. And then Alex, unfortunately, there just misses it right in front of goal. I know she's going to be upset at that, but It happens when those plays and the ball comes pretty quick. Sometimes that happens, but obviously they created chances, and then here was spectacular too.
How good a goal is this, Allie, from Jaden Shaw?
Amazing. I mean, the way she just opens up her body, puts it on, you know, her back foot, sets herself up with a great touch forward, and that's enough space. A lot of players can't do that. Receiving a ball, playing it out just in front of you, but not too much, so that you get a great touch on it, fast trigger, and she placed this right in the bottom side corner.
1-1 into the second half when Lindsey Horan has a good chance there, playing a little high press, as the Americans did throughout the game, and creating quite a few opportunities. A minute after that, Sophia Smith into the penalty area, and she draws a penalty, Allie.
Yes, and we know Sophia obviously hasn't been starting and maybe playing the way that she's wanted to play and perform with the national team. And here, she made such a great impact, massive impact, an immediate impact into this game. And I really believe that it's going to be a tough decision for the coaches to see who they're going to want to play, you know, in leading into this final game. I think she made, you know, a stamp for herself. It was really, really good to see how impactful she was, and coming in with that passion, that desire again, and just that mentality to want to get into the attack and create opportunities. That was really, really brilliant from her. And, you know, the coaches, I think, are going to have a tough decision moving into this final to see who they're going to want to start in the attacking three.
Lindsey Horan with the game-winning goal there from the penalty spot. Big picture, Allie, what are your biggest takeaway or takeaways maybe from the victory there over Japan?
I think that their mentality to stay in the game and to not, you know, get down obviously right at the beginning, because it's really difficult for a team. You know, once you get scored on, you concede a goal early on, especially in the first 30 seconds to a minute of a game, your mentality can kind of shift a little bit. And fortunately, from that moment on, the United States obviously dominated the rest of the game. They were able to get into the attack. They created so many chances. Now it's just focusing on how they can tidy up those chances and really score more. Because I think, you know, obviously the chances that they created, and the goals, the amount of goals that they scored, it just wasn't good enough on the day. But what was great coming out of this game was the impact the players had coming in, and obviously just the tenacity and the willingness and want to get into the attack and really create opportunities, which we saw from that first minute goal moving forward right up until the end. So the attitude was always there, and they ended up winning and coming back and getting themselves into the final.
Allie, my big takeaway here has to be the style. I mean, it is a high-risk, high-reward style that the United States is playing. They play a high line defensively, but they're very, very aggressive in the press. And we saw them give Japan, and Allie, you know this, technically there are few teams better in the world than Japan, but that U.S. press created all sorts of issues for the Japanese. I just wonder, Allie, if in a tournament, the high-risk part of that equation might come back to burn the United States when you start to go up against the very best teams in the world. That's kind of what I saw from a team perspective. Individually, I think we got to highlight Jaden Shaw, who not only gets the goal, but Allie was playing a little bit different role than we're accustomed to seeing her play. Usually with the U.S., it's been out on the wing. Here in this game, it was more central, and it sure seemed to work, didn't it?
Right, it absolutely did. And you could see that, you know, her versatility is really going to be key moving into this decision of, you know, who the coaches want to bring for the 18-man roster. I really believe that because she's so versatile, she's so dynamic, you know, she plays as, even on the wing, an inverted winger, so to speak. And so that 10 role, I don't think is too foreign to her. I think that she really made a name for herself in that 10 spot this past weekend. And I think just seeing the confidence that she has and obviously just taking that opportunity, no matter where she is on the field, to really prove herself. I think it's been brilliant. I think it's so inspiring to see for all these young players, you know, having this dream of playing with the national team and getting an opportunity and then doing well with it and then continuing to see her in the squad. I think she's just done such a great job for herself. And, you know, now she's somewhat of a mainstay. She's probably one of the top players on the list for the game days for the coaching staff to decide. And she's just done brilliant. She scored, what, 5 goals in her first 5, you know, opportunities with the national team play. And it's just nice to see a player like that who has really earned her spot in this squad moving forward.
Yeah, a goal in each of her first 5 starts. The first player ever in the long history of the U.S. Women's National Team to do that. So it tells you a little bit about kind of where Jaden Shaw is right now. And let's remind everybody, she's just 19 years old. Allie, the other player that I think stood out in this game is Mallory Swanson. We've been waiting a long time. And it's not just that she played and she came back, but she looked like the Mallory Swanson of old. And I think that's probably the most important takeaway from this past weekend.
Absolutely. And I even wrote her saying how proud I was of her, because we definitely missed that. We definitely missed her as a player. You have a player who is one of the best dribblers in the game. Her vision, her, you know, willingness to want to get into the attack and create things. She wants to be a part of every opportunity. She's just very dangerous. She's lethal. She's very difficult to defend. I can attest to that. And she doesn't look like she's even lost pace. I mean, coming back from this injury, obviously you focus a little bit more on the stability exercises and your recovery to get back to this, you know, this ability to perform at this level. And I think her focus on that really is, you know, proven well. And she's just as come back like she's never left. And I'm so happy to see her back with the squad, because she just creates this spark and this impact that, you know, I think we've been missing for the past year.
And I don't know if folks, you know the details, but she's talked about it publicly. She had a really kind of rough recovery from the knee injury. It wasn't a simple ACL. So the fact that she's not just back already, but again, looking so dynamic, and she's backed it up with her league form a little bit, Allie, what we've seen in the NWSL already. So it looks like Mallory Swanson well on her way back for the U.S. Women's National Team. Of course, the other semifinal in this She Believes Cup was Canada against Brazil. Now, Brazil actually led this game 1-0 early on. This one also played, by the way, Saturday in Atlanta. But Canada gets their equalizer in the 77th minute. Jessie Fleming on the set piece to Vanessa Gilles, who converts there to make it 1-1. The game would go to penalties. And of all the things you expect, you do not expect Marta to miss. And yet she did. She wasn't the only one for Brazil. Antonia, she steps up, can't convert as well. And when Canada needs a big kick from the spot to send it home, you know who it is, Julia Grasso, she converts there. Canada wins 4-2 in the shootout as they advance to the final against the United States in the 2024 She Believes Cup. That'll be played Tuesday night in Columbus as we get a look at the most recent matchups between these two. The most recent was, of course, that epic rain fest in the semifinals of the Gold Cup. Allie, help me out here. Give us some context on this rivalry. Is Canada the U.S. women's national team's biggest rival right now?
I think so, yes. I do believe they have gotten better in the past few years. They've obviously proved themselves this year. And in the Gold Cup, we all saw how many goals that they scored and the way that they were playing and performing and the style and the mentality, I think, has what separated us over the years. But now you see a Canadian team that has a willingness to want to win. And they are using their firepower, especially in the front six, I feel like, with Lyon and also having Desiree Scott and Janine Becky back in the squad, I think is going to be even more powerful and really difficult to break down. I think, you know, not having Sinclair in the squad, yes. Is that a bit of a detriment? Okay, but you do have players now wanting to fill that hole. And I think they're playing a little bit different. Now every play doesn't have to go through her. So they're using their front six, I think, in a more dynamic way. And they're also sharing the ball more. They're also setting each other up for success more often than I think we've seen, you know, when Sinclair has been on the field and that's just been their focus. You know, how can we get her the ball? How can she score goals? How can we get her in and around the 18 in order to create, you know, things happening? And now you have other players who are able to step up and do that. You have a lot of players playing in the league, especially Lyon, who's playing for Aston Villa. I think she's done really well overseas. So they're kind of having that confidence, I think, within the squad now. And their mentality is obviously gotten better and is somewhat matching ours. You have 10 players who are playing in the NWSL, so they're getting that, you know, aggressive, athletic style of play. And it's really impressed me over the past, you know, 6 months, the way that they've been playing. Their PKs, obviously, in the Gold Cup weren't great, but now against Brazil, they figured it out. They stepped up and they got the job done. Luckily, they scored in the 77th minute, which got them to the final.
Ali, there's a saying that a team that wins repeats. Obviously, it's a different matchup, Japan compared to Canada. From a U.S. perspective, do you think the Americans should maybe make any changes to the starting lineup for this She Believes Cup final Tuesday night?
Well, I think, you know, obviously, I think the world of Alex Morgan. I think she's, her leadership is, you know, obviously separates herself from a lot of the other players in the attacking six. But I do feel like Sophia really impressed me this weekend, coming in and making an impact. And I know she's been hungry and really working hard to get back into the starting 11, because she was somewhat of a mainstay, you know, during World Cup and the lead up to World Cup, where Vlatko really had her starting every single game, and deservingly so. Obviously, she can play on the wing. She came in for Trinity Rodman here in this game, but I do feel like I want to see Trinity, I want to see Sophia, and I want to see Mal as like a lethal three. Maybe give Alex, you know, a rest in this and really see if Sophia can kind of get back to that form that we've seen in the past, you know, couple years. And her performances with club have really impressed me too. And I think that has earned her a position and able to, you know, perform and start on Tuesday.
Swanson, Rodman, and Smith. That's the front three you're suggesting. Is that right, Ali?
And as a defender myself, I don't know if I'd really want to go up against that every day.
I'm telling you, the defenders for Canada, they might want to get ready for some backpedaling practice, because against those burners, if that's a starting three, look out. There she is, Ali Krieger. As always, great to have you with us here on Football Americas. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you. Have a great night.
We had the Copa del Rey final this weekend on ESPN from Seville, featuring a CONCACAF-powered Mallorca side against Athletic Club de Bilbao. Mallorca, of course, coached by Mexican Javier Aguirre. They had Canadian international Kyle Larin in the starting 11. They took it to penalties before falling 4-2 in the shootout. Mallorca, of course, are owned by, among others, Steve Nash, Steve Kerr, Stuart Holden. Despite the fact they couldn't win the Cup, still a great story as they play in a final just 6 years removed from playing in the third tier of Spanish football. Congrats as well to Athletic Club as they lift their first Copa del Rey title in 40 years. Here's a look at Javier Aguirre's record in finals. Some wins, some losses. Which brings us to our next question here on Football Americas. When we think about Aguirre's legacy, Herc, what exactly is it? Because many would say it's a mixed bag.
I don't think there's any doubt in my mind. He's the greatest Mexican manager that's ever lived. Whether he would have won this, lost this, it wouldn't have made a damn difference. Javier Aguirre is by far the best Mexican manager to ever manage in Mexico, out of Mexico, whatever you want. And that may be saying a lot about the current crop or the crop historically of managers and where they've been. But this is a guy that's respected, that has won, that has tried, that is still out there in a crop that don't. I mean, when you think about Mexican managers who've gone abroad to coach, he's the first one that comes to mind. He may be the only one that comes to mind, if we're being honest. He's the only one you can really think of. And when you think about Mexico as a nation, the Mexican national team, and the serious problems they've had, who have they always turned to? Javier Aguirre. It was Javier Aguirre who comes in as bombero, comes in to save him, the fireman comes in to save them in 2002. It was Javier Aguirre who came in and saved them again in 2010. And it's Javier Aguirre's name that keeps coming up every single time Mexico's in trouble. When you think about club or country, he's clearly the best Mexican manager in their history.
Yeah. I mean, when you take a look just at the club work, right? Because so few Mexican managers have even tried to go abroad, the fact that he's gone abroad and had some level of success puts him kind of in a category of his own, right? But I think really the conversation about best Mexican manager ever, most of that conversation were focused on what he did with the national team. And man, Herc, when it comes to the national team, for me, Aguirre is, I'm not going to disagree with you, the best manager Mexico has ever had, but he has made some of the biggest mistakes that Mexico has ever suffered as well. I think about that 2002 World Cup, and he did an amazing job. They won the group, a very difficult group with Italy, Croatia, and Ecuador. I mean, that was one of the best Mexican teams you'd ever seen in a group phase. But what he did against the United States is unforgivable. And he knows it himself. He made a sub in the 28th minute of that game. That's an admission that Ramon Morales should not have been starting that game. And everybody knows it. And Mexico fell apart against the United States team that, based on what we'd seen in that World Cup, Mexico was better then. Go back to 2010. The fact that Bofo Bautista was even on the roster for that World Cup was a real head scratcher. A real head scratcher. But the fact that Vasco Aguirre started him in the round of 16 knockout game against Argentina is, again, to me, another unforgivable sin in a World Cup. So it's hard to look at Aguirre's resume and complain too much, Herc, but, man, there are a couple very bad black eyes for this guy when it comes to World Cup moments for El Tri.
Yeah, and I don't think it takes away from the manager he is. And by the way, the first one to recognize that would be Javier Aguirre. I interviewed him, during the pandemic. We did it in English. Mm-hmm. He gave me 40 minutes of his time. We asked him about the 2002 World Cup game against the U.S., and, man, I blew it in that one. I made a mistake. Yep. And he mentions the substitutions. He mentions who was maybe not on the field, but who he should have put on. And maybe there with that one, it's not all Javier Aguirre. It's not all on the coach. Don't forget Rafa Márquez blowing his lid. Don't forget the players who didn't show up. And don't forget who did show up. But yep. Javier Aguirre, by the way, I don't think there's any doubt. There could be a black guy here or there, as there is with any coach. You coach long enough, you're going to make mistakes.
Rayados was a pretty bad one for him. I mean, that hit his reputation pretty hard, didn't it?
Well, I think more than the Rayados would be the, like, Egypts of the world or, that type of scenario for him. But this is a coach that, more than X's and O's, I think he gets more out of the player because of who he is as a person, who he is as a player manager. And oftentimes you see the video footage of him talking to his players, smiling, joking around. You see the post games of how he treats the press. Like, that's the Javier Aguirre that you really want. Yeah. And yeah, he's going to have his black eyes, but I don't think there's a doubt when it comes to Mexican coaches, he's in a field of his own.
Would you have him for the national team right now?
For this national team right now?
Mm-hmm.
Can I be honest?
He was asked about it this week.
I don't think the coach is the problem with this national team.
Oh. Aguirre is better than Jimmy Lozano. I'd take him right now. And he's definitely a guy who does more with less, right? If there's anything we've learned from Javier Aguirre over his time, if you can get Mallorca to a cup final, he got Osasuna to a cup final back in the day. He got Atleti in the Champions League when that wasn't really a thing that was happening. He could do something with this Mexico team as bad as they are. If somebody could maximize this Mexico, I think it would be Javier Aguirre. All right, let's run it back with some highlights from actually Mexican players abroad. No Luis Chavez. He did have a penalty in the Moscow Derby, but, penalty kicks are penalty kicks. So let's give it to Orbelin Pineda with his second assist of the season. This in the Greek playoff, Herc.
Yeah, and Orbelin Pineda, for a guy who not too long ago was voted the best player in the Greek league, off to a very slow finish, I should say. Well, at least he's trying to heat up right here. Second assist of the season, a good entry ball. It's a better touch right there and good finish.
Game finished in a 2-2 draw between Pineda's AK and PAOK. Again, that's the Greek Super League playoff where Orbelin Pineda notched the assist. Santiago Jimenez with an assist in the Eredivisie. It came in Feyenoord's 6-0, that's right, 6-0 win against Ajax. We're giving that as an assist?
Well, hey, get him going. I'll take it. This is what you need when you got to get going right there. Got to do something. Santiago Jimenez gets a touch right there. And ultimately, it's going to lead to a goal.
Yeah, that's an assist. That's legit.
Trying to bike it. Almost went for a corner kick. Ends up being a good assist.
Yes. All's well that ends well there for Santiago Jimenez, who gets an assist in Feyenoord's 6-0 demolition of Ajax. Boy, talk about a fall-off there in the Eredivisie. After the game, Santiago Jimenez with an interesting message on Twitter. Thank you for all the support. I know that you expect goals from me, and in the last time, I've let you all down. I can only tell you guys that I'm in love with this club and that I will always fight for this shirt. Enjoy it, camaraden. All right, Herc, what do you make of Santi's post-game social media work?
Listen, he clearly knows that he's in debt with the fan base, right? And it's crazy to me that you get a historic win over Ajax, by the way, not just any club, Ajax, 6 goals, and not one of those goals will come from your star striker. Not one of those goals will come from a guy who has 23 league goals. There's a reality right now, or 24, I should say, there's a reality right now with Santi Jimenez is his confidence is shot. And you can see that in his play. Not just for the club team, not just for Feyenoord, but you can see with the Mexican national team, it's taken a toll on him. There are two different players in the first 19 games to the next 19 games. He's he's got 2 goals since the 21st of January. We're in April now. This is a guy right now that's third place in the Golden Boot running. To go that cold, it's not a talent issue. Right now it's mental. Right now it's confidence. And he's got 6 games. He's got 5 league games and a cup final to leave a good impression, a lasting impression, to affect the summer transfer value, to affect that window, because you're going to get sold. And wherever you go, you've got that amount of time to show Jimmy Lozano that you can be the player they need you to be come Copa America. But if you go cold in these next 6 games, part of me thinks that that value, that, that massive number we had in our eyes, in our mind, is going to come crashing down.
Absolutely. Look, man, and it's not just a tweet. You can watch him play. He looks like a guy who's in his head. But the team won 6-0, and the first thing he's doing is going on social media to apologize to the fans. I don't know about strikers, Herc, but I know one thing. I don't want my striker in his head. Yeah. And that's very clearly what's happened here. We can throw out all the theories as to why. Is it the transfer talk? Is it the issues with the Mexican national team where he's lost confidence? Is it some of the criticism, Herc, that he's been facing in the Eredivisie, in the Dutch press, about his play since, you mentioned, December 21st, and really the turn of the calendar year when he's gone ice cold? I think it is going to affect his transfer fee, because there's no way that teams can look now. And it's not just those numbers, Herc. It's not just 4 goals in the last 19. It's literally how he's playing. You can watch this guy and his body language is not the same. If I'm a team scouting him and he was worth 70 million 3 or 4 months ago, I'm knocking that down. It's probably half that right now, Herc, if we're being honest.
And that's a shame. Listen, I don't think it's a transfer talk. I think that kind of stuff pumps you up, motivates you. You know, look who's looking at me. Like, I can go somewhere massive. It's because of what I'm doing here. I think it's the national team. I think being the man in Europe and then going to CONCACAF and knowing you have to sit behind and bide your time because they don't rate you, that's a massive blow to your ego. And as athletes, as professionals, you have an ego. We have an ego. As a number 9, confidence is key. To have that happen, to have that at the highest of moments where you're tearing it up in Europe and you're saying, I'm good enough for Europe. I'm good enough for the Champions League. I'm good enough for the Europa League, whatever the case may be. But I'm not good enough for CONCACAF. That's a massive blow to your ego, and it's going to do wonders. Or it's going to do a number on your confidence, I should say.
Yep. Went to Europe and scored. They wouldn't take him to the World Cup, and they wouldn't start him with the national team. So now he's in Europe not scoring. Maybe that'll lead to more minutes with Altri. Who knows for Santiago Jimenez. Plenty more on the Eredivisie and all things European football in the next edition of ESPN FC, which we should remind you is available 7 days a week here on ESPN Plus. Make sure to always hang out with Dan Kay and the rest of the crew. Parting shot time here on Football Americas. Shout out to USL. As the league made its network television debut over the weekend, Louisville City playing Indy 11 over on Big CBS. They had Jack Harlow in attendance. I'm told that's a very big deal. And more importantly, Herc, the game lived up to the hype as Louisville won 5-3. Thanks to a hat trick from Wilson Harris. Now that's, Herc, what we call taking advantage of your moment in the spotlight.
Oh, I'd say Wilson Harris, what is that, 7 goals in 4 games, dropped a hattie in this game, 8-goal thriller. Listen, the atmosphere looked great. It's on network television. It's exactly what you need if you're the USL, exactly what you need if you're Louisville to start off this game. I watched a little bit of this. Am I to believe that, is Joshua Winder's brother playing, or they just have the same
name? I believe so.
Okay.
I believe
Elijah
so, yeah.
Okay. It was cool to see. It's great to see a second division soccer league in this country have a network deal with not just one network, but multiple networks, the likes of CBS and ESPN. And this was a great game to showcase.
Totally. We don't give the competition a lot of love here, but bravo to CBS. They did a really, really good job on this broadcast. The whole crew over there should be very, very proud. So should the people of Louisville. Yeah. You know, USL probably thought long and hard about, hey, we don't have too many options. We don't have too many windows on network television. Who are we going to put forth? Louisville does it right, and it showed on television, didn't it?
Dude, Lynn Family Stadium looked rocking. I mean, it's very cool to see a bright color like purple up there and the whole stadium vibrant. I mean, and good product on the field, you know?
Good product on the field.
You get an eight-goal thriller like that, that was cool to see.
Eight goals in this game for the USL. Remember the NWSL game we had on ABC, nine goals. So, you know, some of the leagues in American soccer taking advantage of the windows, Herc, that MLS has kind of let slip, right? And I know, you couldn't find it in Hawaii, but I think LAFC, LA Galaxy was on Fox here in mainland United States. I don't know if it was on the Fox out there in Hawaii, but MLS ratings have not been good. They had like almost 200,000 for their game last week on Big Fox.
Well, we don't know that. Oh, Big Fox.
I know. That was the number. That's an all-time low for MLS on broadcast television.
But, yeah, those are simultaneously streamed.
Hey, everybody has a streaming partner, Herc. Everybody has a streaming partner. The numbers we know are the numbers we know. And we don't know the USL numbers yet, but I'm very, very eager to see how they compare. Wow. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Football Americas. He's Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Thank you so much for watching. We will be back on Thursday talking CONCACAF Champions Cup. There are eight teams left now. There will only be four when we meet on Thursday. Plus, we're talking She Believes Cup Final Tuesday in Columbus. Thanks for watching. We'll see you in 72 here on ESPN+.